Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, I'm Coach Kelly.
We have such a special treat today.
Oh my God.
Kelly's parents are in studio with us. Woo woo.
She's
woo-woo.
Like doing her cheerleading moves, my mom.
Of course, we muted them because we knew that they would just talk over us the entire time.
No.
So when we decide that they can speak, then
we're
going to turn on their mics.
So cute.
We always talk about whenever Kelly's parents come into town, I don't know that you know this, mom, but she lights up. Like, she's just like a light. I don't know if it's because you take care of the kids or she's really happy to see you.
It's probably, she's like afraid to speak. It's okay. no, but I absolutely love having them here. It's so nice. And it's just that comfort. I don't know.
So,
that you
mom,
get.
Say hello.
Hello.
Oh, wait. Well, we got to unmute her. Okay, go ahead.
Hi. Hi, everybody.
She's so cute.
Yay. And as typical, right, your dad stepped out to take a phone
this
call.
Is so funny. So we're riding the elevator. I'm like, Dad, mute your phone. And he's like, oh, yeah. And then I was like, no, Dad, really, you should do it. You should mute it. He's like, oh, I'm not going to get any calls. What are you talking about? And so he does mute it. I'm like, no, watch, Dad. You'll see. You'll get a call like in the middle of the show. And he starts laughing. And then 2 minutes before we're on, he gets a call and he steps out. It's hilarious.
Oh, my gosh.
It's so. And it's probably my brother, which is like the irony of all. It's so funny. Trumping me, as always.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Hey, how was your week? How are the kids?
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's like it never ends. Story.
And I feel so badly. I feel like people are probably like bored with my like six stories. But like, this is the truth. So Remy has pink eye and strep. London still
strep
going
too.
Strep too. London still going strong with that diarrhea. Still going.
My.
It's gotten better, but yeah, it's a delight over at the Millers. My God, I know, it's crazy. It's like nuts. The sleeping, however, the last two nights.
Knock them out if they're sick, right?
Exactly.
They sleep. All right, keep them sick and keep them asleep.
It's so funny because Remy's pretty tame right now, and David and I were talking about how it's like kind of weird. He's like so chill. We're like, what is this? Where's my child? It's hilarious.
Oh my.
But yeah, so it's been a little bit crazy, but the sleep's been better. And everything else is good. It was fun. I watched the Emmys with my babysitter. It's cool. She's okay. So cool. Like, we're friendly like that. So that was really nice.
Yeah, I'm so out of it. So the Emmys were already here and gone.
The Emmys are here and gone. Yeah. So that was kind of cool.
Did
any
of your favorite shows win?
So I'm obsessed with Jon Hamm. I don't know if you know this.
No.
The guy from Mad Men. And
okay.
So is my mom. She's like gesturing. He, to me, is delicious. Like, I don't even need dessert. Like, that's all I have to say about that one. So he won his Oscar, so I was very excited. And it was really funny because I went to the Emmys 2 years ago with one of my friends, and I said to her, all I want to do is get a picture with Jon Hamm. And we got a picture with almost everybody else. Matt Damon, Jimmy Fallon, everybody.
Uh-huh.
But we couldn't get one with Jon Hamm. Like, I would see him, and then, like, he'd disappear, and, you know, things got a little nuts. And then she went this year. And sure enough, she sends me a picture, and it's like her, and it burned my heart. I was like, oh my God, no, you didn't.
Envy,
yes.
Right?
Just I was like
on fire.
I was so upset, and I was like, literally, I wrote back, does he know about me? Like, because I was like, at least could you have said, like, I'm doing this for my friend? Like, I wanted some, you know.
Some acknowledgement.
And then I said, well, maybe it's good. Maybe it's good I didn't meet him. Might have broken up my marriage. So, you know, maybe it's good. So, how about you? You went to see your daughter.
I had such an amazing weekend.
Aww.
It was so, so wonderful. So, my daughter had moved up to Grass Valley. She, you know, she did the big breakup with the boyfriend, really hard on him.
Aww.
You know, and I just thought, even though she's not the kind of kid that would say, please drop everything and come, mm-hmm. come be with me, I haven't done enough of the mommy-daughter stuff over the years because she really didn't want that. And so, I just had a sense that if I offered to come up and said, I really want to come see you, she would accept.
Aww.
And she did, of course. The airfare was three times as much by doing it on such short notice.
Yeah.
But I was so happy that I went up to see her. And we had such a magical time. I'm telling you, she's a fairy. I just know that she is a fairy.
This is so funny that you said that because my mom has a friend who believes in all this. And
the way
you describe her, it sounds like it. I have to meet her.
Oh, I took some pictures of her. We went down to the Yuba River and we went swimming. We had our dog, Missy. And she's living in a yurt. This is the coolest, cutest thing I've ever
seen. So explain, what is a yurt?
It's like a teepee? It's like a tent on crack. I mean, literally. It is this 800 square foot. Oh, it's kind of like round foot because it's round. It's circular.
Yeah.
It's up on stilts, but it's this massive, very thick canvas that's like a dome covering like a wood structure.
Oh, my God.
So she has a skylight at the top. Right? And a fan hanging down there. And she has each little section of it is designed as an apartment. So she has her bed, her bedroom area. She has a full kitchen.
Oh,
I'll send you pictures later.
It is just, where is Grass Valley?
Okay, Grass Valley is about an hour northeast of Sacramento.
Got it.
So you fly to Sacramento. So
okay.
There were so many things that happened this weekend that made it really really special for me. One is that I don't tend to, when I used to do book tour stuff, they would take care of me completely. Pick me up in a car, take me to the airport, take me to the hotel, feed me, get me to the show, send me back to the airport, and send me on my way. So I didn't really have to do anything.
Yeah.
So it's been years since I've actually traveled by myself where I have to go to an airport I'm not familiar with because Sacramento was not a location that ever attended. Get rent a car by myself, navigate the roads, you know, drive an hour and a half in foreign territory for myself, go to a hotel by myself, not knowing anybody. Nobody's like,
No one cares. No, exactly.
Yeah, one cares. But then she did everything for me. She was so sweet. So I did all that. You had a little anxiety, but I got there. I was really proud of myself. And she's like, Mom, I'm going to pick you up and we'll take you out. And we'll do all kinds of fun things. Her air conditioning didn't work.
In the yurt.
100 degrees. Of course, and she brings her dog everywhere. So, no, air conditioning in the yurt. There's no air conditioning in the yurt.
This is hilarious. You must have been dying.
Dying, but I was so excited to be with her. I'm like, okay, who needs makeup? I'll schwitz it off anyway.
Yes,
I'll
exactly.
just sweat. We'll go with the flow. We'll roll
You're
the
being
windows
a yurt
down.
Anyway.
We'll turn the music up. And it was like being a teenager again.
So
it was
sweet.
So much fun. And I went to all of her cool spots where she has all this amazing food that she loves. She's so
healthy.
It's just like it's almost disgusting. Where's the M&Ms?
Yes.
Give me something.
Exactly. This is say I would be in this yurt with your daughter. Like this is what's so funny. Like the way you describe her, I'm like, God, we would be like best friends.
She gave me a massage because she had to get her other certificate for her massage part of the School of Ayurvedics. So and she said, Mommy, that was the sweetest thing ever. I felt like I got to give back to you.
Oh my God, this is so
sweet. I'm crying, I'm laughing. So it was awesome. I guess the lesson is not just about my daughter and me, but how important it is for us as we get older, because you know I'm significantly older than you are. Not by much,
not
but just
by
a
much.
Little. Anyway, you would never know it if we were walking down the street, right? But mental flexibility, the ability to get out of our routines and out of our regular patterns of life, to be able to stretch ourselves, I think is just so important for us to not get so anxious in life, right? Because we can build up these stories in our head that, oh, I can't do that because I've never done that before and I'm too scared.
Yes.
So I just felt so invigorated when I got home that I had been really healthy for a couple of days. I got to spend time with my daughter. I felt like I was really doing a mitzvah, like it was like a really good thing
for her.
To give to her. So
that's so nice.
Sorry, I just talked everyone's ear off.
No, but that's so nice.
So happy about that. So we should
recap.
Yes. Also, if anybody would like to give us a call, we have an awesome show for you today, as always. I mean, we're going to have to come up with like 40 more adjectives
to describe
how amazing our shows are. And so if you can give us a call anytime at 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815, and we love your emails.
You can check out our past shows there as well.
Yep. Pretty soon we're going to start giving away some freebies.
Yes.
We want more people to visit.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yes. Oh,
my mom's visiting.
Mama Bear here has.
Yeah,
she wants a freebie.
She wants it. Exactly. You got to sign up on our website, so we'll talk about that.
Okay, so we had some wonderful guests last week.
They were so fun. They were adorable.
So these were your friends.
Exactly.
So you
Tammy
talk about them.
And Lisi Lakotis. They are, quote unquote, the nutrition twins. They're both dietitians. Just such sweet and warm souls. Like, that's just how I describe them. They're just really, really kind and super knowledgeable. We talked about health and how to sneak veggies into your diet or your spouse's diet without them noticing. We just asked a ton of diet questions. They were right on. I mean, they know their stuff.
How was the broccoli?
Okay, so
did
then
everybody
I
eat
made
it?
Yes. No, I ate the whole thing.
Oh.
I swear to God, I ate the whole thing.
Didn't even offer it.
I swear to God, I should tell them that too. They'd be happy. But I made it for David, really, my husband. Right. And I ate the entire thing. It was so easy. It was really great. It was this broccoli dish. They made it very simple. You literally buy frozen broccoli. You don't even have to chop or anything. You mix some of the sauce ingredients that they made. You put it in the oven and bada bing, bada boom.
Wonderful.
Done. It was really good.
All right. Yeah. Well, they missed out. It was your benefit
exactly.
and their loss.
Yes.
So if you missed that show, please tune into it from last week, and you'll find out more about the Nutrition Twins and their fabulous book, The Veggie Cure. So I'm just chomping at the bit here to introduce our guest today. So exciting. And you, again, were instrumental in getting our guest on for today. So thank you.
Yeah, so he's super special.
So we're having Dave Pelzer on as our guest today. And you probably know Dave from his memoir, A Child Called It. This was Dave's memoir about child abuse at the hands of his mother and his eventual rescue and removal from his home by his caring school teachers and administrators. It was an unprecedented international bestseller on the New York Best Times bestseller list for 6+ years. And his new book, Too Close to Me, recounts how he is devoting his adult life to assisting others struggling to overcome traumatic, crippling events. It also explores his own resilience in the face of personal and psychological struggles and the backlash resulting from revealing his extraordinary story of abuse in a public way to millions of readers. Pelzer's work has been recognized worldwide. He's been named the California Volunteer of the Year, the Outstanding Young American, the Outstanding Young Person of the World, and is the recipient of the National Jefferson Award, the Pulitzer Prize of Public Service. Dave, welcome.
Ladies, how are you?
Hi.
Oh, we're good.
Do you think you've done enough, Dave? I don't know if you've done enough in your life.
Well, this is going to sound bad, but a couple months ago I got an award called the Volunteer Firefighter of the Year, which is kind of nice. My father was a firefighter in San Francisco, and I moved up north to a sweet little town called Sea Ranch, and it was kind of like a childhood dream. But, I was very proud to receive that award because... You know, I'm not too young anymore, and I don't run 5-minute miles anymore, but it's nice to just, you know, be at a certain age that you can learn a new skill set and still be of service.
Yes, and we have been fair warned that you are on duty at
yes.
this time, so if that bell
yeah.
goes off...
We live in the fire season, that's for sure.
Wow.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for taking the time today to be on our show, because this is going to be probably one of our most... intense conversations on the show because we really...
And inspirational. Yeah.
So, you know, gosh, your story, it's just incredible. Would you mind sharing a bit about what your childhood was actually like?
Well, it's kind of hard to encapsulate in a quick soundbite, but I must say, as an opener, that I consider myself the most blessed person I know. And by that, the fact that I have 10 fingers and 10 toes, I have a pretty good head, I have a pretty good heart, and knowing what I know about life and how things can turn out, I mean, I was very, very lucky. My mother was a very sick person. She was horribly abused as a child and raised in a very closed society that things don't happen and you don't need to talk about them and explore them, and things will just go away. And for whatever reason, at a very young age, I was selected, and we call it target child selection, which the perpetrator selects a child at random and has, per se, a relationship. And this started at about the age of four and a half before kindergarten, that I was always doing something wrong, that the boy deserved to be punished, and one thing just led to the next level, and that I was isolated from the family. I lived in a basement. My siblings were not allowed to have any contact with me. I was removed psychologically from the family. I was the slave. To survive, I would eat out of garbage cans, or if I was injured, I'd suture my wounds. Or, you know, it was just all these things that went on and on and on, and it just got, the more grotesque it got, the more ridiculous it got, because my father, again, was a firefighter.
Uh-huh.
He knew what was happening. By the time he realized the sickness, it was just way out of control.
Yeah.
By the time I was 12, I was very fortunate enough to be rescued by my teachers, a nurse, and a principal. We didn't have penal codes back then to protect kids or those trying to protect kids, and they called the authorities, and they took one look at me and says, "Oh, my God, we have to rescue you." I think I weighed about 68 pounds at age 12.
Oh,
I was very gaunt, and I didn't discover until 20 years later, because I'm kind of an affable person, and I have a great sense of humor, but I'm a very romantic person about life, and I had the opportunity to visit my teachers. And I was working on a thank you letter. A child called it was just a thank you letter. That just became a little book. And I interviewed my teachers, and Mr. Ziegler told me that he had called the authorities because I came into school on that last day with no skin on my arms because it was burned from a mixture of ammonia and Clorox. And I had totally forgotten that. I have a very good memory. I'm pretty smart. I'm pretty fast. But somehow, out of all the things that were done against me, I somehow had forgotten that. And here's this man. He was the Clint Eastwood of teachers. And even 20 years later, he was still emotional about it.
Wow. Wow. Thank goodness for him.
I know.
And for all those caring people.
Yeah.
Did you end up suffering from any kind of PTSD, post-traumatic stress, as a result of that?
I'm sure. I have to be honest. I don't really like these folks who call themselves master motivational speakers and they have all the answers and do as I do. I mean, come on. There's got to be damage there. I have issues with trust, obviously.
Sure, of course.
Because if I give you my word, I'm going to do it. And unfortunately, a lot of people are different.
I live in light.
I was in a basement for 8 years, so I always have to have light wherever I go. I don't sleep with the blinds closed. I mean, I'm sure I have little things that no one would ever really, really notice, in a sense. But I'm sure I have a form of sense of that. And you know, as you grow older and as life just kind of slides by so quick, you know, that's why I try to tell people, you know, you do what you can for the day and get everything done for the day and don't worry too much about tomorrow and just be grateful for what you have.
It's so beautiful.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think I use, I mean, I also do a lot of comedy, and I use that, too, as a source of relief because there's so many, and I have to say this nice, too, I've never been about abuse. The book A Child Called It was not about abuse. It was about resilience. Everybody goes through something. You know, the kids have diarrhea. There's a divorce. There's cancer. There's unemployment. There's always something.
Right.
And you kind of have to say, what do you want to do about it, and what can you do about it, and just do the best you can.
Right.
I've done radio for years, and I remember being snarky years ago, and I said, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Great Recession. And I'm so happy we're in a recession because divorces are down. We're not buying 20 Blu-ray DVDs every single day.
Yeah.
And every once in a while when we go to Mickey D's or Applebee, we're just a little bit more appreciative than we were before.
So true.
Sure.
So, you know, there's always a yin and a yang and so forth. And that's why, again, I've flown for the Air Force. I've jumped out of jets. I'm 54, and I'm driving fire engines. I mean, to me, what a beautiful, beautiful life I've been blessed with.
Oh, so nice. You are what I would call having certainly turned chicken shit into chicken salad.
Yes.
And 10 times more. I mean, so powerful.
As long as there's blue dressing on that, blue cheese dressing, I'm unhappy.
Then you're
going for it. You know, Kelly knows this, and I've shared this on air, too, that I was pretty severely abused as a child, not on a daily basis, but at the times that it occurred, it was pretty bad. My father, having been a Holocaust survivor, PTSD himself, would drop into zones. He wouldn't even notice that I was his child, et cetera, et cetera. And I was always curious when I ended up doing writing as well to sort of channel that and be creative about it. You know, this idea of becoming from victim to survivor to thriver and how some people just live in that victim mentality no matter what.
And I have to kind of jump in and say this because I study psychology. I'm not a doctor, but I do know the business. And I'll say this with love in my heart. The first 25, 27 years, you're going to get a pass from me. But after that, it's like, okay, all right, let's start building. Let's make the choices now to get ourselves together so the next 40, 50 years can be something happy. Why? And some people choose to stay in that protective womb of misery.
Yeah.
Right? They might be too afraid to get help or get the therapy or do something for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is important, too. And you ladies know this. I've never met anybody who's cried to me and say, look at me, I am a victim of cancer, woe is me. They say, I fight the cancer, I survive the cancer. And you have to sometimes make a choice.
Sure.
If anything, you know, I couldn't talk for about 14 years. I swallowed ammonia twice as a child. It burns your trachea and esophagus. And I had to learn how to talk ABCs at 14. And that led to imitating voices, which led to maybe doing comedy, which led to doing other things. I had no coordination. Because I worked with chemicals for so many years, I couldn't tie my shoes. It was so embarrassing in foster care. But yet I had to work in the coordination to fly for the Air Force. And the life that I think I have now is the life I kind of started that pathway, you know, a very long time ago. But it is a choice. It really is.
Yes.
Yeah. So what do you think it is that do you have any tips for anybody who's in that? What can you say that would help them get into that choice
and out of the victim mentality?
That choice?
Well, it's like anything in life. What do you want, and what are you willing to pay for that, to sacrifice for it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like people, they see a good marriage. They say, oh, look at these guys. They're in love. They're doing well. But they work on that marriage.
Right.
Look at this person with the job. They work on the job. Look at the kids that gets the good grades. They work at it.
Yeah.
And it's like anything. It's, I mean, I work with a lot of people in program, per se, recovery, people in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, how do you do that? They say, you're looking at this the wrong way. You're looking at this in 5, 10 years. We look at it one day at a time. Do all you can for that day, then settle down, and then tomorrow you do it over and over again. Because the one thing about me is I'm not as smart as I should be. I read a lot. I study a great deal. I'm not super smart. The only thing that works in my favor is I have a very strong heart. I try to attempt to do the best I can.
Yes.
And unfortunately, in this keeping up with the Kardashian age of a veneer reality, per se, you know, a lot of people don't have a sense of integrity. A lot of people want it right now. And all I do is I just work.
Right.
I know my limitations, but it's that effort. And the one thing I think I had in my well, the one thing that really worked for me is the mindset at a very early age that if I can survive what I did as a kid, then I can do something as a young adult or as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
What do they say? Whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? So you
that would be Nietzsche, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
So aside from your teacher, Mr. Ziegler, who else were your inspirations?
Well, it was all of them were together. It was Miss Constan, Miss Woodworth, Mr. Ziegler, a school nurse. I would strip down. It was so embarrassing because I was very disgusting and smelled and the sweat and everything. And the school nurse and the school principal. And it was weird because everybody knew about this since kindergarten, for goodness sakes. And I was finally rescued in the fifth grade, even though I had to do a first grade over, in a sense. So everybody knew about this, and yet there was nothing they could have done. My mother at the time was like calling the school once a day, threatening she's going to sue the board and keep your nose out of my business and blah, blah, blah. You know, she was just a bully. And unfortunately, she was an alcoholic, and it was just, she was so far out of control. The more things she would do, she would make up lies. The boy ran into a bat again.
Yeah.
The boy burnt himself on the arm for 38 seconds. And they're what are you talking about?
About?
It was absolutely insane. But I'll say this too, and this is what's important. I have nothing but forgiveness for my mom. And this, we live in a new World War III age of hate, whether it's ISIS or ISIL or Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda, whatever the name of the day is.
Mm-hmm.
And some people forget, they have so much hate in their heart, they forget why they have this strong emotion. And it leads them and it destroys them. My mom was horribly abused. My mom was raised in society to keep her mouth shut, and she was a woman, raised in Salt Lake City, Utah, so she didn't have fair treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And coupled with, you know, the alcoholism and all that in her heart, you know, this was a very bad path for her. And if I don't forgive my mom, I'm done.
Right.
My son is done. Everything about me is done or per se undone. And if I can just give that message out to people, whether it's a divorce or maybe someone did you wrong, work through it as best you can, but if you can somehow find that power of forgiveness, it empowers you to decide how you're going to work your life and your relationships with others.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I want to ask, is your mom still alive?
No, she passed away in, 1992.
Okay.
And she passed away very quickly, and the one thing I do have an issue with her is my father, he was a very gentle person. I mean, he was strong in the firehouse, but he was a very gentle person, and that was one of the reasons why he just could not acknowledge this sickness in front of him. And he was an alcoholic as well, and my parents separated, and my father gave my mother every single cent. He was homeless before he died, and he was in the hospital 4.5 months before he finally passed away, and my mother refused to see him, and I'll never forget her telling me this. It would be too hard for her to see him that way. And it was always about her, the narcissistic her.
I hear narcissism.
And I was with my father when he did pass away, and this is a little bit of a thing. When he passed away, the only thing he had to his name was his fire badge, number 1522. My fire badge number is 1522A.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So sweet.
Yeah. Wow.
That's really inspirational. I like that a lot.
Did your mom...
And that's... Let me jump in again here, ladies, if I may, and I want the audience to really listen to this. What did they say? In the course of a life, one never knows what events may transpire. But things have a tendency to come around. There's a connection there. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're feeling bad and someone says something to you, oh my gosh, I've heard that. If he hears something three times in a day, that's a blessing from above.
Yes,
and you
got
to just keep going and going and going. Yeah. And I can't begin to tell you how my life has come so full circle so many, 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 many times in my life.
That's so beautiful. I agree with those messages too.
Me too.
Yeah. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah. Did your mom ever have a moment in time, ever a glimmer or a glimpse where you had a chance to have her say anything that was reparative to you, ever?
Well, I interviewed her before she died. I was 27. I was studying psychology. I was in the Air Force. Stephen was about 10 months old. And when I interview people, they just think we're chatting, you know, which is a good interview. And of course, you know, that's when I rediscovered that she was abused as a child. And I just... You know, I remember right before I left, she told me something, and this is part of her sickness, too, because she was, you know, on in years and the alcoholism and the arthritis. And I remember I led the question. I threw it out there like, you know, a fishing line. I said, you know, when I was removed, and I just kind of stuttered like Columbo.
Yes.
And she jumps in and says, David, you have to understand, they took it away from me. March of 1973, and you must understand something, David. I was planning up killing it the summer of 73. The only problem I had was where to hide its body.
Oh my gosh,
David. And this sounds kind of awkward, but perpetrators and pedophiles, they develop such a relationship that they have to justify to themselves why they're acting the way they do, and they try to dehumanize the human subject because it can be too traumatic for them.
Wow.
And the fact that things were getting way out of control, people are starting to ask questions. You know, I mean, one time she didn't feed me for 10 days. Another time, 14 days.
Mm-hmm.
One time she choked me for 8 seconds, then 12 seconds, then 16 seconds. So it's just accumulating so much to get that sense of pleasure or control. I think she would have just snapped one time and maybe threw me down the stairs after she choked me, and that would have been that. And I'll say this, too, knowing what I know now, we were very, very, very close to that edge.
Yeah,
sounds like
it. And you know, it's again, I keep saying this over and over, it's a blessing.
Wow, this is incredible. Oh, my gosh. So was therapy a huge part of your recovery? Were you in therapy? Did you speak with people about this, professionally?
You know, as a teenager in San Mateo County, in the Bay Area, in the 70s, I mean, I remember reading Dr. Dwyer at age 14. And I go, yes, nerves don't break. And I was the type of person, and I'll say this positively, if my mother gave me anything that was nice, I always had a very strong work ethic. I discovered early in foster care that once you're 18, you know, it's hasta la vista, baby, get out. And I didn't want to be homeless, so I started working 40 hours a week in junior high.
Oh, my God.
In high school, I worked 80 to 90 hours every single week.
Wow, incredible.
You know, so that was kind of therapeutic, and that helped me develop my skills, motor skills and coordination and so forth. But to me, that was therapy, and I just remember I saw things in black and white. I mean, pardon me for swearing, but I hated high school. Because all the games, the social things, and the different cliques, and I'm thinking, man, I can't wait to be 18 and get the heck out of here, and you guys are still going to be getting drunk or getting stupid, and I was always mentally, you know, a few years ahead, and that's because I was always studying in the basement. I would do little math questions, or I'd imagine things, or I would read books in the dark, in a sense, so I was behind on some levels, but, you know, mentally I was pretty ahead, and you know, it worked. That was my therapy, in a sense. And I think when I got, you know, involved when I was flying for the Air Force, I got involved in kids and abuse and juvenile hall, and that led to helping kids in foster care and foster parents. And one thing led to another, and you know, it became a career. Or the fact I used to read books and thought, what would it be like to be a real author? I used to read Mice and Men, of course, which you know, the two men just wanted a home of their own.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then to have that career. But I think life is therapy in itself.
Oh, that's so nice.
Absolutely. Yeah. So curious question for me, because one of the ways that I sort of worked through some of my stuff was writing this book, Healing the Sensitive Heart, which was about recreating our emotional wounds from childhood in our adult relationships and becoming a magnet for healthy people. Did you find in your own development that you started out kind of drawing in people who were abusive in your life, or did you kind of nip that in the bud right away?
No, I definitely gravitated toward that. I never dated. I never had any social skills, and I was, I think, 23 when I dated a girl, and as we dated, we discovered that she had was abused, and she had a lot of issues, and we both thought, oh, my God, we're so smart. Minus plus minus equals positive. You know?
You
oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, and of course that did not work.
Yeah.
And I think I've gravitated. You know, I'm going to be very honest with you. Yes, I'll never forget this. I remember I was going through a divorce. I was very young, and I remember going to the worst possible. I mean, I would actually get dressed, put on my best shirt, and go to the door, and then close it. I'm not worthy of going out. I'm too afraid. What if no one likes me? And I remember one time I dirted myself and I went to the worst bar in the world. But the worst, I mean, it sounds bad, but, you know, the people that smell and don't take care of themselves. And, you know, I thought, my God, I just want someone to say hello. I just want to be acknowledged. It was like I was the girl from the wrong end of the street.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I was fairly educated, very well accomplished, and debonair like James Bond himself, I had the esteem of an ant.
Yeah.
And I'm asking myself, why? And the answer kept coming back, you're not worthy.
Mm.
You have all these accolades. You know, you've done an amazing things in your life, an adventurous life, and you're not worthy. And sometimes that still kind of bites me in the butt a little bit. And I'm kind of glad it does, because I'd rather be on that side rather than that arrogant side, which makes me go crazy in this day and age. But, you know, it's like anything. You just have to work through it.
Kelly knows that arrogance and entitlement in society is my biggest hot button. Just makes me insane.
You know, I when I do radio shows every once in a while, I act like I have a lift. I say, ladies and gentlemen, did you watch that show Creeping Up with the Kardashians again? Oh my, that lift is coming out. That lift is coming out. And what I'm trying to convey is when people announce how great they are and how good they are, these new politicians we see. I wish I was a member of the press and say, excuse me, sir. With all your money and all your genius, have you ever walked a lady across the street? As future former ex-president of the United States, don't you think humanitarian issues are relevant, sir, ma'am?
Right.
But unfortunately, you know, I think maybe I'm getting old, but there's a lot of dumbness in our country. There's a sense of self-entitlement.
Yes.
And we live in an instantaneous communication age, which adds to that. You know, I mean, I've done presentations all over the world, and one guy says, hey, man, what's your key to success? I said, write this down. Work, 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 and more work, go. You know?
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I think stories are relevant. You know, good stories, inspiring stories, in a sense. And I was blessed to have, you know, to be published, and, you know, publishing's very, I signed the worst contract in the world because of my esteem, and it was printed. This is really nice. The book was printed and presented to my teachers at Rescue Me on the exact day of my rescue, 20 years to the day.
No.
Mr. Ziegler got copy number one.
Wow. Oh my God, that's.
And Miss Constant, Miss Woodworth, we mailed the book to Mr. Hanson, the school principal. And every Mother's Day, the ladies, they got a bouquet of flowers. My foster mothers get a big bouquet of flowers, and the teachers get a bouquet of flowers. And Miss Woodworth is in a retirement home now, and Miss Constance passed away. But what I did is I gave her daughter, I carried a tradition on to her as well.
Wow.
So it is kind of, you know, just knowing where you come from and trying to be respectful. And the one thing I like to do is I like to make people laugh three times a day.
Nice.
I like to do three good deeds every single day.
Nice.
You know, I pray, I
like
meditate,
that.
I cry, and just, wow, what a wonderful life.
So,
and then to say that, you know, in the publishing business, you know, ladies, the average stay in New York Times is what, 2 to 3 weeks? That book was on that list for over 6 years.
That's awesome.
Six years. And we had four books simultaneously on that list.
Wow.
You know, which tells me that the story of resilience is kind of relevant.
Absolutely. If you just tuned in, you are listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, and we have our special guest author, Dave Pelzer, who wrote the very famous bestseller, A Child Called It, and now he has a current book called Too Close to Me. Yay.
I was going to ask, can you give us a little bit of background about that book, Dave?
Well, what it is, I think, and it's weird, I'm not a good pitch person. It's like, oh, this movie's got action, direction's fantastic, its explosion's fantastic. To me, the premise of the book was middle-aged decisions. What's it like to be a middle-aged person and kind of examining your life and what you did 20, 30, 40 years ago and how it kind of represents you today, i.e. low esteem, i.e. you know, relationships that weren't strong relationships, i.e. allowing myself to be taken advantage of, and then finally saying, okay, let's change the equation in a sense. Mm-hmm. And then what I wanted to do too was re-examine The Child Called It, and what I did with the book, which was really delicate, is put my mother's character back in there. And the premise of the beginning, it seems in the beginning of the story that my character is going through a divorce. Okay, let's talk about divorce and why, you know, it happened. And I was traveling 333 days a year, 16.8 hours every day, trying to solve the world's problems, and then, of course, not taking care of myself. Mm-hmm. And in the course of my divorce, all I wanted to do was sleep. Oh. I mean, I was working hard, and all I wanted was sleep. And when I did sleep, my specter from my past, my mother, per se, would haunt my dreams. So the book is about dealing with things as best as you can, in a loving way, mm-hmm. and finding your center. And I think, too, because at one time, too, ladies, I was going to quit. I was going through a divorce, and I says, I'm tired of this. Yeah. I was going to grow a beard and move up to the Russian River in Guerinville, where my father used to take us as kids, and become Mr. Smith. And through a course of events, I decided, you know what? I do have a good mission. I have a pretty good message, and God willing, I'm going to continue it. So it made me kind of refocus on my efforts as well, and finding that center, or trying to find that center.
So you have one child, Stephen?
Stephen is 29. He lives just outside of Yuba City.
Okay.
He's a parole officer. I think he's going to get promoted to deputy sheriff. And his wife is a dispatcher, which is great. So that makes good conversations between a firefighter, a cop, and a dispatcher.
That's funny. I was just going to say, my daughter's in Grass Valley. They live near each other. We could hook them up. But he's
I was listening to you, and I was stationed at Beale Air Force Base, and I remember going to Grass Valley on Main Street, the old brass shop there, ladies and gentlemen.
It's so cute, that town. Aww. It is so cute. It's so sweet.
And yeah, I'm curious from Stephen's, I guess, viewpoint. So does he? I mean, obviously he read the book, he knows. But do you have conversations with him about what happened? Does he ask you questions?
Well, you know, what's weird is you know, you don't want to give everybody the bale of hay. You just want to give them one straw at a time. And we would talk about things as he grew up, in a sense, just like you talk about, you know, the facts of life or drugs or danger, mm-hmm. stranger, in a sense. And I didn't, you know, go into great detail. And when the book came famous, and it was printed in 93, published in 95, and then it made it on the list in 97, and it was just crazy.
Yeah.
Because his friends were reading this book, and he, Dad, is this about you? And we would talk about it. One time he did kind of read it, and we kind of debriefed it a little bit. I mean, it was very hard for him. I mean, we talked in the book, I went in not into detail, but I talked about how I was forced to eat dog defecation with worms, or how I was stabbed and had to suture my wounds, or when my arm was burned on a gas stove, you know, how I, you know, had to basically, like that movie Gone with the Wind, I said, you know, as God's my witness, you know, I'm not going to quit, and I'm just going to try to fight this as best I can. And that's hard for a kid. And then at the same time, too, you know, here, you know, all these accolades or all this attention, what made me upset, ladies, was I'm never known for the accolades. I'm always known for the book. And part of me says, I wish I just made a shampoo. I give you sexy shampoo. It looks great. You're sexy, sexy. Get out of here. You know, there's not an emotional content there. But because it's psychologically about abuse and, you know, trying to kill children, it really resonates with some people in different ways. And it's like you're carrying the cross, and that's really hard for a kid, mm-hmm. to do that. But it was a blessing one time. We were in D.C., and I got the National Jefferson Award, and I flew him out there. He was a young man, and we got to do a few things and so forth. And just to see him, and we gave each other, you know, it's a mano-a-mano thing, but we gave each other the quiet nod. Like, Dad, you weren't there all the time. I understand now what's kind of going on. You know, and God bless you. And I said, Sir, God bless you, because I'm actually doing this for you and your kids.
Oh, yeah.
so curious, coming from that kind of past, when you knew that you were going to have a child, did you have a conscious decision making about how you were going to discipline or, you know, handle limits?
No, I think the first thing for me was terror, because I was still very young, very disconnected, you know, new to the armed force, flying for the Air Force, and, you know, new to the relationship. Mm-hmm. I mean, all these, I was just terrified. You know, I wasn't worried about, you know, my anger issues or whatever, something like that. I just thought, okay, I'm so disconnected. Am I going to be able to love this thing, or is this thing going to love me back? Mm-hmm. And yet, out of all the relationships I've been blessed with, I mean, friendships and business relationships or loves and so forth, Steve is the love of my life. You're a mother, you know this, but when you hold the baby and how they react and how they give you love unconditionally, and to see someone grow and their values, or you remember the first steps or the first time Stephen walked on grass, I'll never forget that, or I learned to throw a baseball, he's learning to catch the baseball, or to this day we go to the Giants game in San Francisco and he loves Star Wars as I do, and we're both big James Bond fanatics, and that was, I never told him about Bond. I never told him about Star Wars. And yet the fact that he likes these things and we can share it together. Or sometimes he'll come over and we'll have a cigar and a beer or just a glass of wine and we won't even talk. We'll just sit outside and watch the deer and the foxes and, again, the nod.
Right.
And it was very natural and very loving.
It's so amazing when people can break that generational chain of dysfunction and abuse, because that's so common.
Well,
so,
I'll say this too, ladies, and again, I'm being very honest. I'm no way near perfect. No way near perfect. I mean, some days are very hard for me, or sometimes I'm very emotional, or sometimes I'm a little withdrawn, or, you know, I've made a lot of mistakes. I've never did the drug thing, and I never did the P. Diddy stupid parties in Vegas and all that stuff, but I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, and either whether I gave love the wrong way or it was taken the wrong way, or if I give my heart or my wallet, it was taken the wrong way, you know, and I'm going, you know, I'm at this age, there's a little regret that I could have done better. I could have worked harder, or I could have spent more time here and there, but it's so important, I think, for everybody to understand that we're all just human.
Yes.
None of us are perfect. None of us are ever going to be perfect. And, you know, and that's why I tell people, if you're having a great day, you better cherish that. Because that's, you know, once or twice a year, G. Diddy looks down at you and says, okay, today we bless the Millers. No diarrhea tonight. Get good sleep. God bless you.
Yeah.
And you're going, oh, my God, I slept. This is great.
It's true.
Of course.
So, Dave, well, we have a couple emails. I'm wondering if you'd be so kind to answer.
Okay.
Dear Coach Kelly and Dr. Deborah, I'd like to do more good in my life, but feel I'm just barely getting by in my daily grind. I know you've had on so many inspiring guests and authors who seem to contribute to the world. What can I do on a small level, but still continue my everyday life to help in the world? I honestly,
here we go. Smile.
Smile.
I like that.
Smile.
Okay.
You smile. When you're having a bad day, you smile. You open up a door for someone. You walk someone across the street.
So
you do
small
things
gestures
that make a difference. If you see someone that's hungry, you go to Mickey D's, you buy them a Happy Meal, you put $5 in there, you give them, and you bless it, and you go.
Yeah.
You see, you don't, a lot of people, they say, I can't tie my shoes, but I'm going to conquer Mount Everest. No, stop it. Stop it. Start with the small things that makes it resonate for you and for them.
Mm-hmm.
Courtesy, kindness, those are things we can do, every single one of us, every single day.
Absolutely. I also have this saying that attitudes are contagious. Is yours worth catching? And I think just having a positive attitude about something is so beneficial to the people around us. You know, it just,
because the one thing I've learned too over life is I'm pretty hardcore. I'm very intense and so forth. And a lot of people might take that the wrong way. But the one thing I've learned over life is you never know what that person's going through.
Right.
You don't know whether they're going through a divorce or they have cancer, they got laid off, or they're just having a bad day. There's a saying in the fire department, we see great people on some of their worst days.
Of course.
That's why we're very kind, we're very compassionate,
that's so true.
We're very careful, we're very well trained, we're very responsive. Boom, 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 boom. And it's like anything in life, you know, think with the head, but act with purity of heart.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you can do, my dear, with the email. Okay. Purity of heart always wins out.
Beautiful. Love that. So nice. Do you have time for one more?
Yes, we have time for you ladies. By the way, we should do another show. We should do a show on comedy. I'll make you ladies laugh.
I would love that.
Okay,
it sounds so good.
Okay, dear hosts, I'm so excited you're having on Dave Pelzer on today. He helped me so much. I was emotionally and physically abused also in my childhood. My question for him and you both is, does this pain I carry ever go away? I've been to therapy, but I feel like I'm carrying this emotional scar and I can't let it go. Any tips on how to live a better life knowing the pain I endured in my past?
Okay. Now, this is going to sound radical. And you ladies as professionals may disagree, and you have every right to. I call myself basically a combat therapist.
Okay.
No foreplay. It's combat therapy. My job is to put you in an ambulance, and then you get your therapy. But for this lady, we'll call her Mrs. Smith, I want her to psychologically vomit. Yeah. I want her to psychologically vomit every single thing in her heart, vomit, vomit, vomit. Because when you vomit and you get it all out, it's kind of dirty and it's vile and, oh, it's gross and it gets in the hair. We can wash the hair. We can wash the blouse. But she's not vomiting enough out. And the thing I want to really, really, really bring home to this is this lady is looking at the situation for what she thinks it still is rather than what it was. And the other thing, too, is this. In combat therapy, Mrs. Smith, this is Dr. Dave Pelzer, all-knowing, all super smart, but I'm sorry to tell you this, Mrs. Smith, you have 10 days to live. You have 9 days, 23 hours, and 58 minutes to live. If you knew, any of us knew we had 10 days to live, what in heaven's name would we do? We'd stop whining. Once we go to the anger and denial and finally to the bridge of acceptance, we would live our lives to the best of our ability. You know, and what I'm trying to say to Mrs. Smith is, because I don't know her age, but, you know, if you're on the back nine of life, you know, you want to focus on being happy and healthy, and you survive to be happy and healthy. You survive to be of substance, in a sense. But it sounds to me either she's not getting the good therapy or she's not allowing herself to dig in and dig in and dig in and find out, oh, my God, that person was sick. That person was this. That person's not me. I've been in therapy for 20 years. Oh, my God, that's a long time. Yeah. Do something different to change the equation.
Yeah. Well, we have two perfect coaches for vomit therapy. Your children,
Kelly. There you go.
Kelly's kids.
Well, I don't know if you know this, Dave.
Contact the girls.
I have, like, a horrible fear of vomit. It's really funny, and I feel like I've now been desensitized from my kids. So
yes.
It's really funny.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's amazing. You know, the bodily fluids, kids, odors. It's like, you know, once you have a kid, you can talk about anything. You can do anything. Please. I've been there. I've done that. Please.
Absolutely.
Well, Dave, it has been such an amazing time to have you on our show. So informative, so helpful. I just love your concepts of resiliency and living in the present and doing what you can do in a small and simple way every day for today. And I totally agree that therapy can sometimes be a hindrance to one's recovery. Mm-hmm. If you find a therapist who wants to just milk the victimization and not help you get into the sense of survivor and ultimately to being a thriver, you know, you're wasting your money.
Because my therapy is this. You know, give me the Kardashians and the Lindsay Lohans and anybody else who's a victim of mentality. I'm a chief with the Air Force. I'll put them on a C-17. I'll drop them off in Kandahar. And I'll say, happy, happy, happy Hunger Games. I'll see you in 6 weeks. Because if you can survive cancer, if you can survive living in the desert, if you can survive abuse, my God, you can do anything. But you have to decide to make that mile and make that pathway yourself.
Okay. You are so inspirational, and I just have to say on a personal level, I just feel like I'm going through a lot right now, and I feel like you completely helped me, you know, even today.
Well, ladies, I mean, I appreciate that. I really do, and I want to thank you for all the work that you're doing. I truly, truly do, because, again, we, like I said before, we live in a different age, and a lot of people are very narcissistic, and we don't have, I think, a lot of people really out there, you know, promoting resilience, promoting personal accountability and responsibility. So thank you for the work you do, and I'd be more than happy to go on another show again if you like.
Awesome.
We'd love that.
You're good ladies.
Thank you,
much.
Dave Pelzer, the author of Too Close to Me. Get a copy of that book because it is amazing, absolutely amazing.
Thank you
Beautiful
so much.
Beautiful story. Thank you so much, Dave.
Bye-bye.
God bless you, ladies.
Thank you, too.
Wow. So
incredible.
Wonderful.
Incredible. I don't even know what to say.
Okay,
like
next show I'm going to come up with, I'm going to bring in 47 perfect adjectives for us to be able
to talk
use
about
for
exactly.
all of our amazing guests, because we sound like we say the same thing. Incredible. Awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Incredible. Awesome. Maybe that's our new show, The Incredible Awesome Show.
Right. Well, let's talk about really fast next week.
Yes.
So next week we have the Pet Psychic. Is that right?
Oh, October. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so
excited.
So. Yes.
I hope so.
Exactly.
I
believe so.
Okay.
Sonia Fitzgerald.
Yes.
She is on Sirius XM. She is the Pet Psychic. So that'll
exciting.
Be a good light show, you know, after
yes.
after this. So
it'll
be good.
we have pets, so
yes,
we have
exactly.
a lot. And I wonder if she'll do anything with past pets too.
Oh, I'm sure she could. I'm sure.
Very exciting, because I want to know that they're all going to get along wherever they end up.
Yes,
you know?
I'm
that
sure.
they feel like they're all part of the family, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right,
so,
well.
And then tell us quickly about your books and where they
can go. They'll see it all on
okay.
our, yeah, yeah.
All right, good.
We'll go to our website and
then you can,
and you can see us individually.
All right, great. All right,
love
thank
you, Kelly.
You so
love
much.
You all.
And thanks for my parents
and
for being
her parents here.
Here.
They were so quiet.
I know. It's the first time. All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.